Shall we begin?
Why not? Welcome to Frankie Sense and More. It's like she's got a whole lot of goodness for you with a little bit of sass.
Frankie, did you just say...
She sure did. Not to mention, along with...
Whoops.
Join us now as Frankie Picasso and her new co-host mix it up with authors, musicians, and interviews with world-changing people.
Let's begin now.
Okay, let's begin now, because it only makes sense.
To Frankie Sense and More. It is Frankie Sense and More right now. That's what it is. I'm your host, Frankie Picasso, and today you are going to be meeting my incredible guest, Anne Marie Hancock. But first, I want to do a little bit of housekeeping. I am excited to announce that next Friday, Marla Martindale and I are teaming up to offer free card readings on air live. Yep. On Facebook, right here on the Good Radio Network. So we will be doing that at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that's going to be really exciting. Also, I have a very special show tonight at 7. Unusual for me, I know. It's Mission Unstoppable, and I will be interviewing Cece Nguyen. She is from Australia, from the Australia Health and Humanity Organization, and so she has some special stuff to talk to us about there. So... onward we go. Before I started the show today, I pulled a card, and it was the soldier beetle. And it's kind of interesting because that card is about personal power. And it comes from my Mother Nature Spirit deck. And it means, it represents the struggle that we all have inside of us to, you know, be authentic and to be courageous and to do the things and live our life the way that we want to. And it's kind of, you know, it kind of does go with our show today because Anne Marie lived her life the way she wanted to live it, not the way other people wanted her to live it. So that's pretty exciting. And so ask yourself, you know, do you have the courage to live your own life regardless of how others believe you should live your life? Okay. Well, as I said, my guest today is Anne Marie Hancock, and she is probably the closest thing I've ever met to a saint. I don't know if she would agree. But she is a renowned journalist, television personality, multi-book author. And she is the daughter of a mom who could almost be swapped out for my own. I know a saint when I read one, believe me. Her latest book release, You Can't Drive Your Car to Your Own Funeral, relates to the tale of this mother-daughter who became her mother's caregiver. Her 91-year-old mother, cantankerous, rebellious, secretive, very independent. She was diagnosed with cancer, and she refused to acknowledge the word, let alone the disease. But with the help of spirit, Anne Marie keeps herself sane by keeping her keen sense of humor nearby, allowing Jesus to do the heavy lifting for her, and understanding that love can conquer all. So welcome, Anne Marie, to the show.
Thank you so much, Frankie. I'm just delighted to be here.
Thank you.
I've been reading about the unstoppable Frankie, and I think we are of like minds.
I think so. As I said, you know, we have similar moms, and it was a little embarrassing at times because she would just let off at people, and I'd be like, oh my God, what are you saying? What are you doing? No filter sometimes, because, you know, charge right in there. I'm right, and I'm going to get what I deserve, and, you know, that kind of attitude. And it kind of felt like your mom to me.
I have a word for that, Frankie. It's called complex. We call them complex.
Complex.
Do you like that?
I like that a lot. I do.
I do, too.
So I'm just going to double check here that we are live. Gosh, I hope so. You took on this role for your mom. Your mom was diagnosed with cancer, and you didn't quite say, but I'm assuming it was skin cancer.
Yes, it was squamous cell cancer.
Okay.
She had a little tiny dot, if I may just interject this.
Yes, please.
On her forehead in May. And we asked her, the family, what that was. And she said, it's nothing. So... September, going fast forward, I had a niece who was married, and mom for the pictures had a big white patch on her forehead. And after the wedding, we became a little assertive as a family and said, what's under the patch? Very interesting, because my mom was a nurse.
Oh, wow.
And my mom was a nurse. And she said, it's just a little something. We said, well, we're going to take the little something and go to the doctors. She said at that time, don't worry about it, and did eventually go herself sometime at the end of September. And the bottom line is it was squamous cell cancer. They took the top of her head. They took the side of her face. She looked like a little Egyptian mummy with a big bandaging and just her eyes and nose and mouth exposed.
Oh, my gosh.
And didn't have to be that way. But the bottom line is that it was. And it's a lesson for anybody and listening out there today. Those little things on your body, if you have some kind of inkling or feeling, trust it. Because it could be more than you think. And go get it checked out. An ounce of prevention is really, really important.
Yeah. I know my dad had, you know, two or three removed, which then you move on with your life, right?
I've had 77 Mohs surgeries.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I was the iodine girl on the beach with Crisco oil for many years.
Oh, right.
So now I'm paying a price for that. But we didn't know. We didn't know about sunblock and those things.
No.
So here we are. And mom is diagnosed, not talking about it. I got a phone call from my father, who was crying. He was just broken. He said, Mom's got cancer. And I said, may I speak with her? Well, she doesn't want to talk on the phone. So I got in my car, I drove over, and I said, hey, we're all here for you. What's going on? And she said, it doesn't matter. It's no big deal. And that was the end of the conversation. Yeah. So my father, because of the diagnosis, I think the stress led to a fatal heart attack. We were stunned. He played tennis, played professional semi-pro ball.
Wow.
He was offered a movie contract. I mean, the healthiest, high-energy guy, one of them I've ever known. And he just didn't wake up one morning. So
who are you closer to? Who are you closer to, your mom or your dad?
Reflecting, I would have to say, I think I'm more like my dad, and yet nothing like my dad, but more like him. He's very outgoing. He loves people. He loved the Blessed Mother. I love the Blessed Mother. So probably more like my dad, though I love them equally. I really did. I love them both.
So I guess it takes both personalities, right?
Well, there's always balance in relationships. You know, I've always felt, be it correct thinking or not, that like minds attract. My husband and I were married last weekend, 50 years.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yes, I adore him. He's absolutely incredible. But mom and dad were as different as day and night. My father, very outgoing and never met a stranger. And mom was very quiet. Maybe introverted and didn't really like going out, didn't like the social life and wanted dad right there with her in a leather chair by a fire at home. So it was an unusual relationship, but surely mom was absolutely lost when my dad passed. And now we're facing more surgery. The cancer spread. It spread to her brain. It cracked her spine. We would ask her, how are you doing today, Mom? And she'd say, about a 7. And it's funny, Frankie, because initially, how are you after the diagnosis was, I'm about a 7. And then the last 5 days of her life, how are you today, Mom? About a 7. So we never moved back or forward from 7.
Yeah.
And of course, I was reading everything I could get my hands on. I had been part of a healing ministry that traveled the world for several years. Many countries, many people, all kinds of personalities, many of them terminal. And so I thought I had the tools in my box. But mom was a challenge.
But you did have the tools in your box. And that's why I want to go back and talk about why.
I was learning and acquiring as I went along.
It's always more difficult, I think, with a family member. You have a long history of relationship and way of reacting and interacting. And like you talked about in the book with your husband, you know, you came from a family that acted one way and he kind of taught you a gentler, better way to interact. You know,
there's absolutely no question. My family is Irish, and I'll tell you a funny story shortly about that. And my husband is more English. His mother lived with us for several years with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. She was the gentlest soul I have ever known. And I know people say, oh, he's a saint, she's a saint. But this woman was the real deal. I never, ever heard her say an unkind word. And everything was, well, pray for it. Pray for it. I'd come home from the studio and blah, 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 blah. And she'd say, well, let's say a prayer. And that was unusual. In our family, you yelled it out. And you're right. My husband taught me. I tell the story about living in Missouri because he served in the Army after graduating from VMI. And I made biscuits one day, and I was so excited. It was the first thing I'd ever done. I couldn't boil water. It was pathetic. And I was waiting for him to come home for lunch. And he was late. And when he came in the door, everything kicked in. We're all products of our environment, right? And where have you been? That's just thoughtless. That's inconsiderate. And I got quiet. He wasn't saying a word. And I mean, we hadn't been married that long. And like, you know, in the first year, and he said, Anne, are you finished? No. Did I say thoughtless? You're thoughtless. And he goes, okay. Have you said everything you want to say? Because I want you to know something. Tomorrow, I'll remember it all. And I thought, ooh, well, I'm sorry. Maybe you're not thoughtless. He's, honey, I'm sorry. The thing in court ran long. I couldn't be helped. And I said, but my biscuits are burned. He said, and I'm sorry. So I learned to talk to issues, to talk calmly, and that names and words, we can't take them back. We have to think before we speak. So my husband has been a lifelong lesson for me and his mother who lived with me. They taught me more than I could ever tell you.
I know that you allude to your other book in the book, and I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to read your other book. But you became a healer, or you felt
you know,
surprised you, or what was that about?
Yeah, well, yes, it did surprise me, and I don't like the word healer. I feel, first of all, everybody heals. If you play music, your music is healing. If you dance, your dance is healing. Whatever gift God gave you, that's what you use for healing. And so immediately, long story short, I'll make it very short.
You have to make it short.
I'll talk forever.
Yeah.
I went to Medjugorje, Yugoslavia, where the Blessed Mother has been appearing since 1981, still happening. They have a papal delegation there. I'm an old hard-nosed debater, hard-nosed reporter. Went to dispel this, that it was happening. Interviewed all the scientists. And I was very, very impressed. I was absolutely blown away. Had an extraordinary experience there that changed my entire life. And then was in another place where a lady was appearing. And she told the visionary, they turned around and looked at me. And the visionary said, I'll never forget it. God is giving you an extraordinary gift of healing. And to myself, thankfully, I said, and the people in hell get ice water. What in the world? I'm a hard-nosed debater. First of all, it was very humbling and obviously shocking But I walked outside that room, and another story, it's in one of my books, I'll never forget. Little boy from Lake Worth, Florida, his mother asked me to say a prayer with him. His name was Danny. And I said, just a minute and I'll find you a priest and we'll get you some help. And she seemed agitated with me. And she said, Anne-Marie, can't you say a prayer with the little boy? And I thought, ooh, that sounds terrible. Yes, I'll say an Our Father and a Hail Mary. But at that time, I smelled roses. The air just was completely filled with the scent of roses, and not like anything I've ever smelled before. I mean, like the essence of the rose. And that frightened me too, because I'm a debater.
Yes.
I'm a hard-nosed reporter. So I ran as far as I could run. And that happened to be to Shoney's for a jalapeno burger. And I'm sitting there, and a little boy came. 300,000 people coming on a weekend, and this little boy walks in. He'd been on a stretcher. So I didn't recognize him. And he had a like a bouquet of balloons. I guess Shoney's gives balloons. And his family said, there you are. We have been to the monastery. We have been to the Holy Hill. We've been here. We've been there. We've been trying to find you. And I said, well, what can I do for you? And they said, Danny is completely healed. He had come by ambulance. And I just remember my ears feeling like really hot. And I was stunned, and I said, well, you need to thank the Lord. And I wanted to go home. And that's exactly what I did. I came back to Richmond, and there were a couple of other people, one quite prominent, and they were healed of diseases. I could feel heat pouring through the top of my head and out through my hands. And really didn't know what to make of it. For a long time thought, well, I have to wear black. I have to wash my face. Nobody is going to go for a TV personality. you know, going around with hot hands. It makes no sense to anyone. It didn't make sense to me. But what I learned, I've had several spiritual directors in different places, Notre Dame, Abbot Benedict McDermott, head of the Mary Mother of the Church Monastery. Several, I can't even name them all. They've been beautiful and wonderful. But it was Abbot Benedict. And I said, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't know what's expected of me. I'm just me. I'm nothing. And Abbot said, you're something. You're made in the image and likeness of God. Everyone is made in the image and likeness of God. That makes every one of us extraordinary. And God has given you a special gift. He isn't looking for extraordinary people, but ordinary people to do extraordinary things. So I don't know, the terminology took off, and there were thousands of people coming from all over the world to Mary Mother of the Church Abbey on the James River here in Richmond. And I never have been comfortable with the word healer, except the way I explained it a bit ago. We are all healers. But I want to say this, it's very, very important. I don't think of myself as a healer, because only God heals. Everything comes from God. Everything we are, the way we look, the way we walk, it all comes from God. And so it's extremely important that he get all the credit he deserves, which he rarely does. So publicity people.
Let's call you a vessel.
What?
A vessel through which he heals.
Yes. You know what? I say I'm a broom that Jesus sweeps with me. And when he's finished, hopefully he will lovingly put me back in the closet. But the media, as you well know, Frankie, they have to pin something up there or your publicity team. And I mean, the first time I saw TV journalist healer, I thought, oh my God, I'm just going to go somewhere and hide. So the first thing I do is always explain, no, I'm not. I am no different from anyone else. God decided he can use anybody. It just happened to be me. And this happens to be a special gift
okay.
he gave
You're
me.
A little, maybe a little humble here, my dear.
But no, I'm not humble. No, I'm really not.
Show me your ego. Show me your ego.
Okay, I will.
I'm going to say that you are, you know, everybody's looking towards going into that fifth dimension where we live heart-centered. And, you know, you are the example of a heart-centered human being. And you're already there. And there's going to be lots of people trying to go. And some people are in the third. Many are in the third. Several in the fourth. Very few in the fifth. But, you know, that's where you are. And you're a perfect example of a heart-centered human being and what we all try to attain to be. And especially, you know, as that caregiver. And because I know for myself, you were in extraordinary pain with your hip. You were about to have hip surgery. You needed hip surgery. You were bone on bone. I just had hip surgery in May. I know.
Oh,
felt. I know
how
that.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank
Good.
You. Yeah,
Good.
It was amazing. I'm so
Good.
Glad it happened. And it happened, you know, 15 years too late. But the fact is it finally happened. And so I know that extraordinary pain that you were going through, grueling pain, helping your mother who, even though in your heart you knew that she could rely on you and that she could act out to you because you weren't going to go anywhere, it's still like your husband said, you're going to remember those words tomorrow. And it hurts. It hurts. And
yes,
and
yes.
Very thoughtless. And with the secrets and with just lashing out and, you know, you're there. What can I do for you, Mom? Nothing. Go away.
You know, Frankie, it's a funny thing. You know, when you do media, which you do, which I have done most of my life too, you hear everything. And you learn after a fashion, if you're going to survive in the business, you've got to be like a duck and let it roll off your back. But you pointed out something very important, and that's when it's personal. And when you bring it home, it's like God says, how about this? Horse of a different color. And that's basically what I was attempting to say initially. I had to acquire some new tools in my box, and I couldn't walk away. I knew this was going to be a long journey. I stepped away from everything, and no regrets. But Mom was such a character. I loved her. But to share the stories is to give you insight into her personality. If I may share a couple.
Please. Yeah.
And we're Irish. And I was taking her to CAT scans and MRIs and dentists, all the things that you know, Frankie. And I'm going down Charter Colony in Virginia one day, and I picked her up in the morning. She was very quiet. And after about a half a mile going down the road, she said, "Where are you going? You are a moron." And I said, What did you say? What did you say? You're a moron. I said, oh my gosh. I pulled the car over. I said, Mom, I was in Ireland a couple years ago. You had asked me to research our family name, Moran. And it's pronounced moron. So you are, I am, the whole family is, we're all morons.
I love it.
I mean, I don't even need anyone to laugh when I do those things. I think my whole life, it's like I laugh so hard at my own jokes that it doesn't even matter and I don't notice. But my mom looked at me and she said, Anne, you're not funny. I said, I know. And you drive like Moses. I said, and when did you meet Moses, Mama? Anne, once again, you're not funny. I know, Mama. I know. I learned to laugh at myself. And a humor is at the top of my list, right under God. And we were going across town one day, and my mom wanted to drive. And, you know, we went at it over who was going to drive. And I was saying all the things that I'm confident many listening have said. Oh, it's my treat. It's my turn. And trying to spare feelings. And she said, no, you drive like Moses. I'm driving. So she drove through two stoplights.
Yeah.
And they were major intersections. So I thought, you know, two, I don't know, we're coming up here on three is a charm. So I said, Mama, I think we drove through a stoplight. Didn't even reference both of them. She goes, Ann, your father did it all the time. And that was the end of that conversation.
That makes it right. Yeah.
But Mom's license plate, you know, the title of the book is You Can't Drive Your Car to Your Own Funeral. And I think Mom thought that she was. Her license plate was PRRFCT. Perfect. Perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. But she was happy. She was free. She was independent when she was in that little Toyota.
Yeah.
And I learned that in the course of caring for. And
which is great, except for everybody else on the road.
Yeah. Well,
a little
yes,
scary.
That's called Jesus, I Trust in You. I have a lot of faith. You know, I had said that's at the top of my list, yeah. You know.
You just and take the wheel.
Yeah. And I've always believed, yeah, you know, yeah, that when you're on the edge of darkness, that there are two things. You're either on solid ground or you learn to fly. And that's exactly what happened with my mom.
And how she amazing was, that she got her license renewed at 91.
Yeah. Like, yes, she called me early in the morning, Frankie.
Who are these people giving out licenses?
Yeah, I know. And I said, Mom, did you take a test? No. I learned the eye chart. Because when you were practicing with me at home and we were going through the little book, so I had to read two lines and I passed. I said, are you going home? It was early in the morning. And she goes, no, I'm going to Walmart.
She loved Walmart.
She loved Walmart. It was a mile from the house. And I think as she got worse and worse, that was one thing she could do. She could negotiate that. She could manage that. And often she wouldn't buy anything. And other times she would just buy something and return it the next day. But she was very private. She was very, very interesting. She had a heart attack one day during all of this. And she called my sister, who works at a hospital. And my sister said, what's going on? And she said, I'm having a heart attack. And Betty said, Mom, call an ambulance right away, thinking, of course, maybe she wouldn't get there in time. And Mom said, I am not calling an ambulance. You come for me. The neighbors will be talking and we don't need the discussion and commotion in the neighborhood. None of them think I should be living alone anyway. So here she was having the heart attack.
And too embarrassed to take an ambulance.
You're just not going to do it. I think it, some of it's generational.
Yeah.
I think they grew up. I always say we're victims of victims. And also, you had heard me say products of our environment. And Mom grew up in a family where you didn't talk about your feelings. You just didn't. You were always powering on. And what the neighbors thought was extremely important, that your reputation, we all care about our reputation, but, you know, when you're in an emergency situation,
yeah,
we have to get our priorities in order and get the help that we need. But it was, we asked her to come and live with us. And she said, no, I'm not doing that. I want to live by myself. I like Archie Bunker. What's the other show? Oh, she liked Notre Dame football and BCU basketball. And she said, I like my independence. And so I would just go every morning, some mornings with a trench coat over my pajamas because she wouldn't answer the phone. And I would get there, and I mean, I could feel my heart pounding out of my body. And I'd say, "Mom, you okay?" "And chill, I'm fine. You didn't answer the phone this morning." "I didn't feel like it." And there was another day she didn't feel like it. We had planned to go out to lunch. She loved French onion soup. And was all excited about that. We found a good place. Long story short, the next morning, I said, "We're coming to pick you up." And she said, "I'm not going." I said, "Are you sick? Do you need me?" "No, I'm staying at home today. I'm staying at home." I said, "All right, well, I'll check on you after lunch." So to make a long story longer, I went to lunch with my friend, and we're coming out, and my friend said, "And Marie, isn't that your mother's license plate?" And I said, "Well, what do you live? Oh my gosh, there it was, perfect, coming out of the Taco Bell."
Taco Bell.
Yeah, so she blew us off for a taco. I said, "Oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I'm sorry," to my friend.
Why would you be embarrassed?
Well, I didn't want to humiliate her, and my friend wanted to treat her and had gone to the trouble, and I felt badly for her. But we decided we'd follow her down the highway just to make sure she got home.
She didn't hit anybody.
I didn't. No, no.
My mother used to take mirrors off. For
no, no. Well, there were some missing parts on her car, but I never saw what happened, and she didn't know what happened. It was somebody else.
Yeah.
But we did go check on her later and just didn't acknowledge that she was at that Taco Bell having that taco. And just, "Hey, here we are. You doing okay? Just want to check on you." And she said, "I'm good." She said, "Do me a favor." And we both said, "Sure, what can we do?" "Go over to the Peking and get me Chinese food. I want beef and broccoli, and what was the other thing? Cashew chicken." And then she named something else. I can't even remember. And I said, "Okay. Yeah, I need food for three." So I turned around. My friend and I drove out. We bought it. We brought it back. And she left us standing on the screen porch, and she said, "Thanks. I'm entertaining tonight." You've got to laugh.
You got to laugh. She what a character. Well, let's talk about her love for her eyebrow pencil and lipstick.
Yes, I know exactly what you're referencing, Frankie. She was probably a week before she passed. She had taken a fall. She was in the hospital again. She was actually trying to get in her car and took the fall. So after the hospital, I decided we needed to bring her to our home because going back and forth was very challenging.
It is challenging.
So I told her, I said, "Just for a few days and we can watch, we see you basketball, all the things that you like." And I had a bell by her bed. I had a thing to block her in so she wouldn't fall. I was in there most of the time. In fact, some nights I slept on the floor with our English Mastiff, just because she's so independent. I didn't know what she'd do. So this particular night, I was exhausted and put her to bed. And I said, "There's the bell. I'm right over there. Just ring it if you need me." Never heard the bell. Didn't even get upstairs. And I heard a moaning, came running down. And she had gotten out of bed. She was going to take a track, moved everything, the portable potty, all of it. But I'm looking at her on the floor in a pool of blood and trying to stay calm so she would be calm because she's now had the heart attack, right? I said, "Mom, we're going to get some help. Go back to the hospital. Looks like maybe we need stitches." She said, "Anne, get my compact and lipstick if you're calling an ambulance." True, true story.
Half her head. Yes, my husband. You have to call the.
Yeah. I mean, blood everywhere. And I brought her purse, got her compact out, her lipstick. And she is flat on her back, putting a lipstick on the floor. And with blood all over her. I mean, just really think about that.
I know.
It's
like everything went away except for this.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, she's putting the makeup on. Always about the presentation.
It's a mask, right? I mean, it's the mask to mask everything else.
And so, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
No question. No question.
You know, my mom was so secretive too. And
very.
Like, I really don't know a lot. I don't know anything about her family, like really. And you couldn't ask her because she really wouldn't say anything. And I found it so interesting. And of course, like, I'm an open book. You know, I don't care. Ask me whatever you want. But I thought back in my mid-20s, I thought, how amazing would it be to have a business where you interview these people, your parents, and get, you know, who was your boyfriend? Who was your first love? What are you about? What did you want to be when you were, you know, my age? Like, what? And they just find out who they are as people. But they never opened. They never.
I think it's that. I mean, this is just my opinion. That generational thing again, where they're very private. They don't share their business. If there's a disagreement, they close the windows in the house. And today we're more open. We're more comfortable talking to each other. We're more comfortable getting help. We're far more open today than those who were all part of World War II. I've thought about it a lot. My father at Guadalcanal, and he enlisted when he was 15 years old. He lied about his age.
Yeah.
And then mom's a Navy nurse taking care of him, wounded, what they saw, what they thought. Mom from a small town. And we were talking about relationships. You know, my dad's from Jacksonville and just very open and so different. The two of them just kind of learning together, you know. But just very, very interesting to me. I've always felt, and again, this is just my own little feeling, that everything in this life comes from love or fear. Mm-hmm. We are either in love or we are in fear, which is anger, negativity, resentment, jealousy. It's all of those.
Right.
All of those.
All those disease causing.
Yes. And we want to put people in boxes and categories. I know I had met Elizabeth Kubler-Ross once. And I'd read her books, and they're fascinating. Of course, most of us have read them. But she talks about the stages of grieving. And I always go back to my old debate, hard news background, where, okay, I'm going to read this so I know what to expect. Number one is anger. Then we've got this. I've got it. But my mom never moved out of stage one. So many people don't progress through the stages where they finally come to grips with what's going on and are at peace. Some stay in anger. Some continue to grieve. And I think my mom was just very angry. She never said the name of that disease.
Who was she before the disease? Who was she in her 40s and 50s? Like, what was she like now?
That's a good question. When I think about mom, and my sisters and I have talked about this. That's
sure.
an incredible question. None of us ever really knew. Breakfast was always there. But there was no discussion. There weren't, and I don't mean this as a negative.
No.
There weren't a bunch of kisses or hugs. And most of the time, which is maybe where I get some of my strength from, it was move on, move on. It's time to move on, mm-hmm. move on. I heard that a lot growing up, whole lot growing up.
You don't hold, yeah. So
I can't tell you my mom's favorite color. I can't tell you, I can't really tell you what she felt about anything. And I would ask, and towards the very end, I intuitively knew, you know, we were going south. I brought 4 or 5 beautiful books over that I just loved because they make me so happy. And I left. I came back another day. And she looked annoyed, you know. And I said, "What's up?" And she said, "Take this stuff out of here. Get it out." She said, "Ann, you need to lighten up. You need to read some Jacqueline Suzanne and Nora Roberts. You need to lighten up." And I said, "Mama, did you read any of them? I don't like that stuff." Well, yeah, I picked up John Paul II. I picked that up. And then there was that novena thing. And, well, take it out of here. Well, the very interesting thing is that my mom passed on the feast of St. John Paul, 365 days in the year. So I think she made that 9 days of prayer, that novena. But as far as talking, I didn't care if she talked to me. I mean, I for her, wanted her to talk to someone and get some of this out. That you can't walk through cancer and cellulitis and a heart attack and not have feelings. You
and your husband just dying too.
And her husband gone. And there was no discussion about that. But right up till the end, she wouldn't say cancer was always let it go, drop it. And so I thought, okay, the manipulator here. And I'm going, I know. She loved a Catholic priest named Father Glass. And so the whole family loved him, a wonderful man, very loving, very kind. So I called him and I said, "Father, I'm sorry to disturb you in the evening like this, but I think Mom is coming to the end of this journey. And I would just like to know that she has said whatever it is she wants to say or whatever is in her heart to whomever, but she loves you so maybe if you call her, she'll talk to you." And Father called her. He called me back in a minute and a half.
Didn't take long.
Minute and a half. I said, "Father, what'd she say?" "Emery, she said she's fine. She asked me how I was." And we concluded our conversation with, I'm 90 years old. What sins can I commit at 90? Really? Have a good night."
Oh, my
goodness. That was Mom. But
no secret notes, no secret journal in the house after?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing, Frankie. I mean, I would even ask, knowing that she took care of my father during the war, "Tell me about that. What was that like? Well, all those people coming into Jacksonville." And, you know, and of course the celebrities were also coming. Helen Keller, my father became friends.
Oh, wow.
She came to visit the sick. And what was that like, Mom?
Yeah,
what
so interesting.
Like? I don't know, Ann. That's yesterday. So a lot of responses when I think about it, you're really making me think. We're monosyllabic.
Interesting.
No, get over it, move on. And I think a lot of move on, you know, I mentioned losing a child in there.
Yeah.
And it was a very difficult time. I've been ill. I have a questionable autoimmune system. But we had lost Stacy and buried her. My husband was at the time in the military and had to go back to Missouri. And I was staying at Mom while I was healing for just a couple weeks before I returned. And the second day home from the hospital, my mom came in the room and she said, "Ann." She said, "Stacy's gone. We've buried her. Now your sister is getting married in 3 weeks and we must get you into a dress." And you know, I've reflected on it a lot. I don't judge my mother. I loved her. But I really think that my mom could not handle that. And I know my father couldn't. They could not handle the death of that baby. And I was so young, but I've always had so much faith. I think faith is true confidence. But just that time to move on, you've got to get in a dress. And it's like you're almost comatose
so
with
any
your thoughts.
Any feeling at all
was denied.
Gets covered.
Yeah.
Just throw it back there and move on.
Yeah. And maybe that's why I did well in television, because you anesthetize yourself. It's like you don't hear it. It's somewhere out there in the ethers.
Yeah.
You don't hear it.
Yeah.
And but I have thought about that a lot. And
it feels cruel, and I'm sorry for that.
When I think about it, I don't feel that, Frankie. I just had tremendous compassion for her, because I really don't think she could handle it.
Did you know your grandparents? Sorry, did you know her parents?
I did.
And were they similar bent? Or?
My grandmother was, I don't remember her ever giving hugs or saying anything emotional or sentimental.
Yeah.
But she was a very dependable, stoic, lunch, breakfast, dinner on the table, but no conversation. But my grandfather, I mean, he was just a love bug. Just a love bug. Full of hugs and, you know, sweetness and very, very, very interesting.
So interesting. Care. My grandparents were like that too.
Really?
On my mother's side. And my grandmother, I mean, I wrote her a thank you note for something she gave me as a kid, $5 or something. I go, thank you so much for the gift. And she wrote me back, this is the most ungrateful thank you note I've ever had.
Oh no. Actually wrote that?
On the same card on the back. I mean, can you imagine who does that?
Were you afraid of her?
No, I wasn't afraid. I didn't like her. And that was the first time my mother actually called her mother and said something, you know, kind of stood up for me to her and said something. But other than that, it was like, I didn't care for her at all. And I didn't know why she didn't like me. And I found out years later why she didn't like me.
I don't think it's you. I think, that, you know, I mean,
it was my dad or something. I don't know.
I think sometimes we don't like ourselves.
I'm sure
she did. And we project out. I think for my mom, she maybe always wanted to do this or do that and do more. And, you know, I wrote about it, I think, in the book. And she would project out. And I think that's what your grandmother was doing.
Probably.
Same thing. Yeah. Unhappy. And you're this vivacious personality and doing all these things. I've been reading about you with the motorcycles and the painting and everything. You're every place. And it's very hard, I think, for people who are not all over the place.
Well, I wasn't then.
But even as a child, to relate to that. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
To a real vivacious, you know, never met a stranger type person.
Because she's going to do what, you know, and I alluded to that at the beginning of the show for you, because, you know, what, you're going to go into television now, Anne-Marie? What, do people have to know who you are? Like, what's up with that, you know? And it's just this trying to hold you back or maybe not even hold you back, but keep you small. Don't let people look. Don't let people know.
Yeah. What do you think that is? I mean, you read what I wrote.
Yeah. I think part of it is their fear of, you know, well, first of all, she's private. So if you get known, people might know about them. Right. Maybe. And like, I've always told entrepreneurs, because I love to work with entrepreneurs as a coach. And I always say, you know what? There's so many people in your life that don't tell them what you want to do because they can't understand it and they get afraid of it. And so they'll tell you, don't do it.
So it's fear again.
It's all fear. Yeah.
It's all fear. It's all fear again. Because, you know, logically, I think that's part of, I'm a very logical person, I think, except for these things that have happened to me that don't make sense. And I think the Lord did that to confound my brain. But it's just very, very interesting to me that television and performing, I was a ham as a little kid with a baton in the living room till you told me to get out. and you had to pick me up and physically remove me. I love people. I just love them. I love all of them and all kinds of people. And I would perform and be told, you know, to leave. So that was inside me. And there was almost no doubt about what I truly wanted to do. And did it and was blessed to win awards for it. And I have a glamour hang up. And I felt that because that was coming from home. It was personal again. And I was examining my conscience growing up in a Catholic home. You know, gosh, maybe my ego is too big. I always thought ego was easing God out. But maybe I think too much of myself. But as I pursued the humanities, studying world religions, I felt differently.
Well, you're supposed to be the best you can be.
Using the talents that God has given you.
Exactly.
But I thought I wasn't humble. And I had mentioned Abbot Benedict earlier. I went to him one day and I said, I don't think I'm humble. And we need to work on that. What should I do? It's like, again, give me the book and I'll study this and I'll do humility. No, it doesn't work like that. He looked at me and he said, Anne-Marie, I want you to remember something if you never remember anything. Do you know what humility is? He said, it's giving credit to God for all that you are and all that you have. And I can remember the tears just flowing down my cheeks because I really wanted to be humble. And I thought, you know, this is too much. This is all ego. The product I'm selling in the media is myself. It's ego. So I left TV for a bit and taught children. I had the degree to teach. I love them. I just love them. And won some awards in that area and came home. And what do we do? We win these things. We take them to family because who could love us more or who could care more? Other people, often there's resentment or whatever it is that they're dealing with, and they project out. But it was teaching. You were born to do television. And that had an enormous impact on my life because I realized in that moment that I was living not my life, but I wanted so much to make Mama and Dad proud. Anything they wanted, I would do. And I wasn't listening to my own heart. I'm happy anywhere, but I have always felt my place was media. It's always been my place, and I couldn't even believe I was paid to talk to the most wonderful people in the world, to get inside their heads.
So exciting.
And to share. It is so beautiful. It's such a gift. But I learned that lesson. And I think our lives are tapestries. And I often say, you know, God, I have spent my whole life, most of it, in television and in radio and in hard news. And now I am just beginning to see that you were preparing me for something far more important. You were preparing me to use media to make a difference, to change the world, as you say, Frankie, to change lives.
And that's what the good radio. That's why I started.
Yeah,
you know, I said,
yeah,
can do the world of good and not just talking about it. Doing it, finding people. You know, for me, it was really important that I find people who are doing good things in the world and showcasing that so that people realize it's not all the big things, it's all the little things that too, right?
It's true. And there are things that we can all do. This book is important for me.
Can you hold it up? It's right behind you. It's right behind your shoulder.
It is.
Yeah.
I have this cord on me.
Oh, do
so
you?
I don't
okay.
Think
well,
I can move.
I'll try to see if I can.
But I'll add book, it. Let me see. It's
right
me.
Behind you.
Yes, I see it, but I
that's
can't.
Okay. That's
I'm
okay.
I'm all hooked up. I'm
oh,
all hooked up.
How great.
Yeah. But anyway, it's, we have
can't
to
drive
do ourselves.
Your car to your own funeral. And that's the name of your. We're running out of time,
yes.
Emery. It's been so
yes.
wonderful to talk to
May
you. Like,
oh. I want to say, Frankie, the proceeds, all of them. From this book, go to multiple sclerosis. My daughter has been suffering with this for 20 years, and she is so courageous, so strong, so beautiful. So I really, really want everybody to look for that book. It's a flashy cover with my mother holding up traffic. You can't drive your car to your own funeral. And again, I can't say it enough.
The is that really your mother on the cover?
It's sort of just a sketch.
Yeah, yeah.
I made it figurative. You
yes,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It could be anybody's mom.
Anybody's mom. Yeah.
Could be your mom. Could be anybody's mom. But you will be helping multiple sclerosis.
That's
and
awesome.
There are lots of tools in there that I had to learn, and maybe they'll help someone else that's dealing with the same thing I've
it's a wonderful
dealing.
It's a wonderful book for any caregivers.
Oh, thank you.
And it's just
thank
a wonderful
you.
Book anyway. And I mean, it really, truly is, whether you're a believer, you're not a believer, it's a great.
We are all God's children.
We're all God's
He doesn't make junk, does he?
No.
Nope. He
I
loves
like
us all.
I like that a lot. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
my
Frankie.
Guest today. Thank you, Facebook, for allowing us to be here with you.
Your pleasure. Just a joy.
Thank you. I'm going to take us off, and we're going to wave goodbye to Facebook and stop the live stream, and I'll stop the recording. All right. I'll